start talking to you about excuses. My family has been in insurance, my family, my dad, my brother, for years and years and years. So this little illustration that I ran across kind of struck my interest. These are excuses that drivers gave on insurance reports that they turned in about why these accidents happened or how they happened. So I want to read you some of these excuses. He said this. First says this. He says, "Well, I thought my window was down, but I found that it was up when I put my head through it." Another excuse was, "Well, the other car collided with mine without giving any warning of its intentions." Excuse. A third one said, "Well, I cannot believe it, but a pedestrian hit me and went under my car." I like this one. It says, "Man, the guy was all over the road. I had to swerve several times just to hit him." Next one says, "Well, an invisible car came out from nowhere, struck my car, and then vanished." And the final one was this. It says, "As I approached the intersection, the sign suddenly appeared in a place where no stop sign had ever appeared before. I was unable to stop in time to avoid the accident, and to avoid hitting the bumper of my car, the car in front of me, I struck the pedestrian." Well, excuses. We all give excuses at times, don't we? We all have, whether it was when we were younger and we had to give an excuse to our teacher why we didn't have our homework, or maybe more now for me of why I didn't get all the honeydews done that was on that list that Misty left me to do, or whether it's to God of why I didn't meet an expectation that he had of me, or why I sinned yet again, that sin that I promised him I would never do. You know what I'm saying? We all make excuses. Well, that's part of what Paul's getting at in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. He is anticipating an excuse. He's trying to avoid an excuse. He's concerned that the Corinthian church is about to give him an excuse rather than to give him the gift that they promised. Now, to go back a few weeks to some of the history of the background behind what's going on in 2 Corinthians. If you remember, the Apostle Paul is concerned about the churches that are being persecuted, the Jewish churches in Judea and Jerusalem. And so he's raising some funds from the Gentile churches that aren't being persecuted quite as bad. And he has gone to, he's talked to the church in Corinth. They have, when he first talked to them, very encouraged. They want to give. They want to be a part of this mission. Well, when you think about Corinth, I want you to think about the province of Achaia, because that's what it's going to be called here. Corinth is Achaia. They're in Achaia. Now, the Philippians are the Macedonians. They're in the province of Macedonia, and these are neighboring provinces. And so he goes from Corinth, and then he goes to the Philippians. He goes to Macedonia, and these are poor people, far poorer than those who are in Corinth. And he tells them about how eager the Corinthians are to give to his offering for the churches in Jerusalem and Judea. And they get on board. They say, "Yeah, we want to give, and we want to give now." And they give, and they are poor, and they give out of their poverty. I mean, the Bible says that they give what met their needs means and above their means. They gave the shirt off their back. They gave the food off their plate. Now, that's pretty awesome. But the problem is since then, some problems have happened in Corinth. There was a group that began to stir things up. They began to question Paul's authority as an apostle, began to question his motives in asking for this money, for this offering. And so they just kind of stirred things up. And now Paul has written another letter to call them on this sin that they've been involved in, this turmoil that's going on. And the people have repented of that by and large. And that's incredible. And as I said, 2 Corinthians is a response to that repentance and that revival that's going on, and reminding them about the gift that they still should be giving, that they promised to give. Because when he gets there, He does not want them to give an excuse of why they can't give to God, but he wants them to give willingly and out of faith. He knows the Corinthians are, when they started off, he was there, that the intentions were good. But how many of you have ever seen good intentions turn into excuses? Anybody ever done that? Seen good intentions? Because they can either turn into actions or they can turn into excuses. Almost the New Year's that's approaching. It made me think about New Year's resolutions. Those intentions, good intentions of things that you're going to do differently this year. I'll look at Brother Al.
Try that for a little bit.
Thank you, my friend. And so we all have good intentions. New Year's resolutions are good intentions about the new year. But let me ask you this. How many of you are still keeping the New Year's resolutions that you set in January 2020? How many of you remember the New Year's resolutions that you made in January 2020? It's 2020's been such a long year. I can't even remember January barely, right? And so we realize that those good intentions can very quickly turn into excuses. So he does not want that to happen. So here's what he's doing. He's sending Titus and a couple other guys. He calls them the brothers to Corinth before he comes for the offering, to get it ready, to make sure it's ready. And we'll talk about that a little bit in just a little while, because it's going to be really embarrassing if he gets there and it's not ready. So he wants them ready. This is about readiness and the readiness of the church for the mission that God has called us to. I hope you saw some of the words about readiness as we work through the text to begin with, but I want to look back at it. You know, when you're doing Bible interpretation, you can know what the text is about when you see repetition of certain words and certain concepts. I want you to see how many times the word ready or readiness shows up at these five verses. Go back and look at them. Look back at verse 2. He says, "For I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the people of Macedonia, saying Achaia has been ready since last year." Then in verse 3, he says, "But I am sending the brothers so that our boasting about you may not prove empty in this matter, so that you may be," what? Ready. You may be ready, as I said you would be. Then look at verse 4. He says, "Otherwise, if some Macedonians come with me and find that you are not," what? "Not ready, then we would have been humiliated, say nothing of you for being so confident." And then verse 5. "So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go ahead to you and arrange in advance for the gift that you've promised, so that it may be ready as a willing gift and not as an exaction." Five times in five verses, he mentions readiness. Ready. We should be ready. So that's why I entitled the message this morning, "Mission Ready." As we go into 2021, Mount Gilead should be mission ready. Now, in the context of this, he's specifically talking about stewardship, because he's talking about a gift that it's being given. So there's no doubt about it. We can think about this in terms of our readiness, and we are going to. We're going to apply it that way in just a moment, in terms of our giving in tithes and offerings. But in reality, it can be applied in really any area that the Lord has called us to readiness for the mission. Any area he's called us to be used. Now, you and I both know that to be successful in virtually anything, then it requires preparation, doesn't it? If you're going to be successful, you got to prepare for it. You got to prepare for it. I mean, if you're going to be successful in any job, you got to have a time of preparation. Let's say like a mechanic. If you're going to have, that comes to mind because somebody asked me about a good mechanic yesterday. Who's a good mechanic that I could use? And I just thought to myself, you know, a mechanic doesn't just wake up one day and have a working knowledge of fuel injection engines. You know, he's got to go to school. He's got to spend time underneath the hood. He's got to put his work in. He's got to prepare. He's got to be ready. What about a school teacher? You find a really good school teacher. What have they done? Well, they've spent their time studying, but they've also spent their time with students and caring about the families of students and loving them. Thinking about how to teach, finding unique ways to teach. They've got to be ready. They've done the work. They've done the preparation. Or even a student. What does it take to be a good student? Well, You got to listen when you're in the classroom. You got to take good notes. You got to spend time studying. So when you take your test, you're prepared. You're ready. You're going to make a good grade. Well, if that's true in the physical world, it's very much true in the spiritual world. If we're going to grow spiritually, if we're going to be used spiritually, then we have got to take the time to prepare and be ready. And that's all the more true in our faithfulness in the way we honor God with our finances, with our money. Matthew 6:21, Jesus says, a verse that you're familiar with, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Your treasure is, your heart will be there. So be very careful with your money, because your heart follows your treasure, right? You want to lead your heart in the right direction. Now, as we're going to see next week, there are some I was tested, it's not the Rona. There are some unbelievable promises given to those who show that their faith is genuine in the way they give, in the way they're generous with their finances through tithes and offerings and other ways. And we'll save that to next week. But what I want you to see today is that tithing is not something that we just wake up one morning and are like just able to do. It's something we got to prepare to do. It's something that we've got to organize our lives around, especially when you think about in 21st century America, 18% of the average American income goes to consumer debt. That's just debt that people put on credit cards, 18%. And so we realize that by and large, America is a very in debt nation. And so when you get in debt like that, it's very easy to start thinking, well, I can't tithe. I'm in debt too much. And that very well may be the case. And that's where you got to understand, if we're going to give, if we're going to be mission ready, if we're going to be faithful in whatever God calls us to, or particularly giving in tithes and offerings, we've got to prepare for it. We can't just hope for it. So here's what I want us to ask, just one question through the rest of our time together this morning. How do I prepare to become a tither? You know, so many, the one thing about Mount Gilead is Mount Gilead is such a giving church. It always has been. I believe it always will be. And it's a reflection of your faith, that just a genuine faithfulness of the church, that you love God, you believe in the mission, you believe in the gospel, and you're willing to show that. But it comes, faithfulness and tithing comes from the genuineness of faith. And so people who have genuine faith are looking to be faithful, and this is one of the ways. So, but now some folks have genuine faith, but they've just never been taught how to tithe, how to reflect their faith in their giving. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning from this text. The first is this: how do I become a tither? Well, you just got to make the decision to tithe. First of all, you just say, look, I'm going to do this. And it's one of the hardest parts, because it becomes, if you're not careful, it becomes a crisis of faith. Because to be a tither, you've got to make a choice. Am I going to desire to please God more than I desire to want things? And that's tough. 21st century America, where there's a commercial on every, you know, few minutes on TV that stirs up the wants, where there's new cars put out every year, there's new houses being built, there's always new things you can want. I mean, you can have the phone of this year, and 6 months later, that phone is like, well, wait a minute, I got the old phone, I want the new phone, right? And so it's just built in our kind of the DNA of our culture, the consumeristic mindset that we want things. But what if that same consumeristic mindset of wanting of material things could be transferred to wanting to please God? That, yeah, it's nice to have things, but you know what I really want? I want God. I want God. Somebody in our church was telling me a story about, just this morning, about somebody they had talked to that was very successful, a young man, very successful, and had all these blessings. And the response to that, that particular person had all these blessings, they said, yeah, it's good, but all that stuff's going away. What really matters is what we do for the Lord. I thought, what a good word. What a good word. So we have to desire to please God more than we desire to want things in this moment in the worldliness of the age we live in. So we got to have a bigger perspective, a greater goal for what we accomplish in these lives that we live. Okay, so make the decision to please God. Secondly, we've got to remove the obstacles that prevent tithing. Remove the obstacles. All right, so what is tithing? Well, put simply, tithing means a tenth. All right, so the Bible teaches us to give a tenth of what we make as first fruits right off the top up to the Lord. And all offerings can be over and above that, to the church, to the missions of the church, to missionaries and so forth and so on. So it's incredibly important, and so many people want to do that. But it's very hard to do that if you're overextended in your bills and in your finances. So if we're going to be tithers, what we have to do is we have to reorganize our lives around faithfulness to God. Now, what does that mean? To reorganize your life around faithfulness to God. It means you have to ask some questions when it comes to the way we spend money. It means, first of all, you have to look at something and go, well, can I buy this or not? Or should I buy this or not? And if you're not thinking about the Lord, what you'll ask is, you'll just go to your bank account and you go, well, do I have enough money to pay all my bills and still buy this? But a tither asks something different. A tither asks, do I have enough money to tithe, pay all my bills, and still buy this? And if I can't, then it means I can't afford it. And if I can't afford it now, God doesn't want me to have it now. And that's okay, because I'm organizing my life around a way that pleases God and prioritizes the mission. I'm glorifying. Essentially, what you're saying is, look, I'm glorifying God by not having it. You ever thought about that? You can glorify God by not having the newest telephone. You can glorify God by not having the newest car. You can glorify. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having an iPhone 12 or buying the 2021 vehicle, as long as you can tithe, pay all your bills, and still afford it. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So it's prioritizing God. And sometimes you think about this. It's not about, this is going to sound crazy to some young folks. It's not a bad thing to have to save up money to buy something. How many of you ever had to save up money to buy something? How many of you have ever had to save up money to buy something, and by the time you had enough money to buy it, you didn't want it? You know what I'm saying? It's, yeah, I mean, we do that. And that's okay. If you do that, it'll teach you not to be controlled by your worldly desires, right? But you know what? It's also important. If we'll save up something, if we'll save up money to buy something, then it's also a good thing to save up money in order to give. That's fine. It's good. It's a good thing to take a portion of your money every month and say, you know what, I'm going to set aside X amount of dollars so I can give to the Lottie Moon International Mission Fund when it comes around in December. And we're going to be giving that next week. It's with $30,000, so that's super important. So if we'll save up money to buy a car, can we save up money to also send missionaries throughout the world? Sure we can. That's using money in a way to honor God, right? Can we save up money to give and tithes and offerings? Sure we can. Can we save up money to go on mission trips like we take to Honduras every year and to other countries often? Sure we can. If we can't go, can we save up money to help somebody else go? Sure we can. Sure we can. Prioritizing God and God's glory in our finances. And in some cases, we have to downsize in order to get things right. Some cases you go, you know what, I really can't afford this house or this car or these things. And still give and use money in a way that honors God. And so we just look at that and we realize that and we make the adjustments that we need to make. We sell what we need to sell because we understand idolatry to things can destroy us. The Bible teaches that. 1 Timothy 6 verse 10 says, "For the love of money It's the root of all kinds of evil. Now, it doesn't say money is the root of all kinds of evil. Money is just a means. We want to use it toward kingdom means. It's not evil. It's how we use it, whether it makes it good or evil. But the love of it is the root of all kinds of evil. For through its craving, he says, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. So the problem with loving money and things is that no matter how much you have, it's never enough. I heard a story one time. It's a very, very rich man. He was asked by somebody, well, how much is enough? How much is, and that's a good question, how much is enough? And his answer was this, one more dollar. That's how much is enough. One more dollar. And if that's your heart where enough is one more, you'll never know contentment. You never know fulfillment. It's always emptiness. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't pursue great things. You should. You should just pursue successfulness. You should. I'm not saying it's wrong to pursue a good living. It's a good thing. Look, get out there. Use everything God's given you. Be incredibly successful. And then use what God gives you in terms of finances to bless His kingdom, your family, your church, community, the world. That's what God's called us to do. Hebrews 13:5, keep your life free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for as he said, I'll never leave you and forsake you or forsake you. I love that. He says, be content because you have me. You see that? Hebrews 13:5. He says, be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. You ever wonder again why he says that there? Like, what does I have never leaving you? I will never leave you or forsake you. What Jesus says to the apostles before he ascends. What does that have to do with not loving money and being content? Again, what it has to do with when you have God, you have enough. You have enough. Be content. You have me. You have me. All right, running to our last point here on how to be a tither. There's also not only making decision and removing obstacles, but give out of joyous faith. Give out a joyous faith. You know, think about the motives in which you give. So, what's interesting, and I tried to say this at the very beginning as we gave some context about the situation amongst these churches and Paul, is Paul's got some skin in the game on whether the Corinthians give or not. Because you remember, he's used the Corinthians' initial eagerness in giving to this offering as leverage when he went to the Philippian churches in Macedonia. He was like, yeah, man, the Corinthians, they're like next door neighbors. Man, the Corinthians over here, they already said, man, they're ready to give like crazy. Man, they wanted to give last year. And I said, we're not ready yet, all right? And so they're ready. And so I want to know, you Philippians, are you ready to give? And man, they heard the word and said, man, we're ready to give and we'll give right now. And so, man, they gave and they gave out of their poverty and just showing their faith was genuine. But now here the Corinthians are, they hadn't given yet. And now they got all this controversy where they're asking, is Paul really have this authority? And what's his motives? And so Paul's struggling with this deal of what if the Corinthians don't give? What's he going to say to the Philippians who gave the shirt off their back, who gave the food off their table? This is going to be a problem. How would it make the Corinthians look? How would it make Paul look? It's what he's getting at in verse 3, where he says, but I am sending the brother so that our boasting about you may not prove empty in this matter, so that you may be ready, as I said you would be. Here's what he's saying. If you're not, after all that talk, and then all this repentance, if you're not willing and ready to give, you know what it says about all that talk? That it was just empty talk. You see that? So that you might not prove empty in this matter. And not only is it empty talk? But do you know what produces empty talk? Empty faith. It'd be kind of like seeing a huge tree. The word he uses here, empty, it has something to do with like hollow talk. This big, beautiful tree, and you walk up to it and you go, man, this tree is awesome. And you begin to knock on it and you realize that there's nothing inside, that it doesn't have substance to it. He's afraid that the Corinthians' faith is like that. It's all talk, no action. That it doesn't have any real substance to it. And then if that's the case, it's going to look like to the Macedonians, that's the Philippians, that he used their empty talk to manipulate the Philippians to give. And that his faith isn't genuine. Being able to show that our faith is real matters. It matters. Ran across this little illustration. I thought this was pretty good to get to kind of get the point across. There's a little Chinese boy who wanted very much to learn about jade, stone jade. And he went to a great teacher, great elder Chinese teacher, old man. I want to learn about jade. He said, I'll teach you. So he took some jade. He put it in the little boy's hand, held it. And then the man began to talk about all kinds of different things. Men and women and politics and just everything under the sun. And for an hour or more, boy just sitting there listening, holding jade. We're done. He put it down. He left. Came back. Next day, same thing. It's went on for weeks. Because here he is just holding his rock. Man talking about all kind of stuff. Anything but jade. Boy got pretty frustrated. But because of the respect that he had for this great, great teacher, he didn't say anything about it. One day he came in. That great teacher put a stone in his hand. The boy closed his hand around the stone. Then he looked at the teacher and said, wait a minute, that's not jade. I wonder how much of the world looks at the church, looks at our actions, looks at our priorities, looks at where we spend our money, where we spend our time, and says, wait a minute, that's not faith. It's not real. Because you don't love it. You don't give to it. You're not devoted to it. It doesn't consume your passions and your lives. It is vital that when the world looks at us, they see people with genuine faith. And that's seen in the way we give our money. It's seen in the way we give our time. It's seen in the way we give our lives. And ultimately what it shows the world is how valuable Christ is to us. And the fact that we don't trust in anything less than the one who said, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. We value Christ. When we value Christ, we trust Him. So, this last illustration I'm going to tell is going to embarrass my son a little bit. My oldest son. Sorry, Noah, that's one of the curses of being a pastor's kid, you know. But when Noah was 18 months old, he hadn't been walking too long. He started walking around when he was around, around 12 months. And in this pastorum we were living in at the time, it had some pretty steep steps that you had to climb up to get to. Well, when we would leave the house, we would walk up right to the steps, and he would walk up to the steps, and I'd walk up beside him. We'd start to go down them, but he would walk to, and he would stop at the steps. He'd look at the steps, and he'd look up, and he'd reach out. And I'd grab on his hand, and as soon as I grabbed on his hand, that boy would jump over those steps, like to get down. I'm not afraid of anything. Right? We do the same thing. We'd go to the road. You know, we'd be crossing the road that we have to go to the church. He'd run up to the road. He'd stop. He'd look at me. Before he'd step out, he'd reach up, hand. I'd grab his hand, and he'd bolt out to the road. And I'd almost catch up with him, little 18-month-old little boy. Why is it that that little child, 18 months old, knew when to stop and before he stepped out to reach up? Because he knew when his hand was in his daddy's hand, what he couldn't do on his own, he could do with his daddy's strength. That he couldn't get hurt on those steps if his hand was in the daddy's, it's in his daddy's hands. That he couldn't get hurt in that road if his hands were in his daddy's hands. And through that little child, who's grown up to be 16 now, the Lord taught me this. Bradley, before you ever step out, reach up. Before you step out, reach up. And church, I know you know this, but God is calling us to step out. To step out to do great things for God. To send missionaries, to go as missions, to reach our community for Christ. To be a sending church who actually sends out other people to other parts of our city, to other parts of our state, to other parts of our world to start church. Wouldn't it be awesome if Mount Gilead was a church that planted churches throughout our state and throughout the world? He's calling us to reach out, to step out. But before we step out, before some of you are thinking about, I want to give, but I'm concerned about this. There's elements of faith here that's challenging me. And, you know, he's saying that, look, well, before you step out, you reach up and you hold on to the hand of God, because what we cannot do in our strength, I promise you, we can do in His. And so this morning, as we're thinking about being mission ready as we approach a new year, may God find us willing. Let's read verse 5. I'll make one thought here. He says, "So I thought it necessary to urge you, brothers, to go ahead of you and arrange in advance the gift that you have promised, so that it may be ready as a willing gift and not an exaction." In other words, when I get there, he's sending people before him to get it ready, get people willing and ready to give, so that when Paul comes with some other friends from Macedonia, he's not embarrassed because the Corinthians wasn't willing to give. But also, he found people with hearts that were motivated to glorify God. When God calls on us, will He be able to get out of us what He desires with a willing heart, or will it be like pulling teeth? Mount Gilead will be ready. We'll be ready.